Meeting of the House State Affairs Committee will come to order. The time is 3:15 on April 13th, 2023. Members present: Representative Johnson, Representative Allard, Representative Story, Representative Armstrong, Vice Chair Wright, and myself, Rep Shaw. We got a quorum to conduct business. Please silence your cell phones. Anyone in the audience today needs to pass a note to the committee members. Please get the attention of our committee aide, Josh Wallen, who will take care of it for us. I'd like to thank our committee secretary, Sophia Tenney, and Talia Ames for teleconferencing. Our agenda today, we have some housekeeping. House Bill 140, sponsored by the House Rules by Request. We heard and passed it out on Tuesday. House Bill 146, sponsored by House Rules by Request as well, and the governor. And Senate Bill 38, sponsored by Senator Wilson. I'd like to note that House Bill 42, which has been initially scheduled to be heard in today's hearing, will not be heard today. We'll hold that for a future hearing. Our first order of business is House Bill 140, an act relating to the State Officers Compensation Commission and relating to policies of the Alaska Legislative Council regarding allowances and reimbursement for moving expenses, sponsored by the House Rules Committee, again by request. What we're going to do is we're going to rescind action on moving the bill out. We're going to adopt the corrected CS, which we have before us, and move the corrected version in place of the previously moved version. Mr. Vice Chair, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee rescind its previous action of moving out House Bill 140, Work Order 33LS0692 Alpha, as amended.
Thank you. Without objection, we've rescinded action on passing out House Bill 140, Work Order 33-LS0692/A, as amended. Now to the new CS, Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt CS for House Bill 140, labeled 33LS0692 Bravo, as our working document.
Thank you. I'd like to make note Representative Carpenter joined us at 3:15. I'll object for discussion purposes, and at this time, I'd like to ask my staff, Josh Walton, and the sponsor's staff, Heath Hillier, to speak for the committee substitute. Would you come forward and introduce yourself and provide testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just me today. Thank you. For the record, Josh Walton, staff to Representative Shaw, Chair. So the committee substitute before you came about because at our last hearing, we had four amendments, and it turns out that a couple of the amendments conflict with each other, and that is not usually a problem for Ledge Legal to deal with, but we do have to explicitly grant Ledge Legal authority to make the necessary conforming changes, which is something we didn't do in the hearing on Tuesday. Ledge Legal has drafted a committee substitute for us with the amendments and the conforming language, and it's recommended, therefore, that we rescind action, as the committee has already done on the previous moving out of the bill, adopt this corrected CS, and pass this out in place of the original CS that was passed out. I'd also like to note that we have Noah Klein from Ledge Legal online. He's the drafter. And with the permission of the chair, I'd like it if we could ask him to explain the differences between the bill that we passed out as amended and the committee substitute before us.
Thank you. Mr. Klein, are you on board?
To the chair, this is Noah Klein, Legislative Legal Services. I am on board. I'm not sure I heard the question, though.
Mr. Klein, Josh Walton, Staff Director Shaw. The question was what the differences are between the bill that was passed out as amended, if any, and the committee substitute version B that we have before us.
Through the chair to the committee, this is Noah Klein, Legislative Legal Services. The difference is that two of the amendments, one of them essentially bifurcated the compensation committee report, creating a separate report for legislators and a separate report for executive branch officials. And because of that, some of the language in one of the amendments was in the plural, and some of the language in a similar sentence that was also amended in another amendment was in the singular. And so on page 2, line 11 of the CS, it just clarifies everything now appears in the plural instead of the word reports appearing before singular language appearing. And that's the totality of the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Anything else, Mr. Walton?
Nothing from me, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Without that, I'll remove my objection to the adoption of the committee substitute before us. Any additional objections? Seeing none. Without objection, Work Order 33LS0692/B has been adopted as our working document. Mr. Vice Chair?
Mr. Chairman, I move CS House Bill 140, labeled 33LS0692-Bravo, out of committee with attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Thank you. Without objection, House Committee substitute for House Bill 140, State Affairs, Work Order 33-LS069-B has been passed out of House State Affairs with attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations. At this time, we're going to take a brief at ease to sign the bill paperwork to prepare for our next order of business. Back on the record. Our second order of business is House Bill 146, an act relating to fireworks, repealing restrictions on the sale of fireworks, directing the Department of Safety to adopt fireworks regulations, and providing for an effective date, sponsored by House Rules by request of the Governor. This is the first hearing for this bill. It's our intention today to hear the initial presentation of the bill from the bill sponsor, to hear invited and public testimony, and then to hold the bill over. Online, we have State Fire Marshal Lloyd Nakano to present the bill. And assisting in the room, we have Department of Public Safety Acting Legislative Liaison Lisa Puritan. Ms. Puritan, welcome to House State Affairs Committee, and if you'd like to introduce yourself and provide your testimony, I appreciate it.
Thank you. For the record, Lisa Puritan, Acting Legislative Liaison with the Department of Public Safety. Thank you, Chair Shaw, and for the committee for hearing this bill. We're excited to bring it before you. We've got a brief presentation for you today, and we'll go through the sectional, as the chair mentioned. Online, we have the State Fire Marshal, Lloyd Nakano, and so if it's with the permission of the chair, I'd like to turn it over to him and to go through our presentation today.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Lloyd Nakano, the Alaska State Fire Marshal with the Division of Fire and Safety. Chair Shaw, Vice Chair Wright, and committee members, it's an honor to present this bill to you. We will go over the slides at this time. It's on House Bill 146. Would that be okay with you, Chair?
Yes, that's fine. Please go ahead. Give your presentation.
All right, on slide one. What does the bill do? The House bill repeals and reenacts Alaska Statute 1872, and it will make the Department of Public Safety will be required to adopt regulations to establish minimum standards for the sale of the use of fireworks. The sales would be from wholesale, retail, also pyrotechnic operator permits, and firework displays. And we would use the most current standards and fireworks industry standards, such as the American Pyrotechnic Association standard. It will repeal the regulation for saleable fireworks, wholesale license, and definitions. For instance, the reason for repealing fireworks wholesale licenses in statute at this time, we are required to get the license, social security numbers. This is an example of how outdated this statute is. Also, with the definitions, it's not current, and we're trying to use current standards with, it's almost like apples and oranges. Slide three. Why is a bill needed? The existing statute has not been amended for many years. It's outdated and contradicts modern regulations set at the national, international level for standards and federal standards. Statutory changes are not an easy undertaking. This bill would keep the state of Alaska Department of Public Safety fireworks program more efficient and effectively. Regulations can be updated in a more efficient and effective manner to stay current with current references. Slide 4. What is changed under this bill? There's minor changes. The criminal penalties under this bill, instead of going, will be changed from the Fire Safety Code to the regulations that would be in 18-7210. The regulations for municipal regulations for fireworks will only change from the fire code to the regulations. The fire code will be changed from 1872-100, and it'll be, and new standards will be adopted as more current to the fireworks industry standards. And slide 5, do you have any questions for me?
Any questions for the committee? Representative Armstrong.
Thank you, Mr. Nakano, through the chair. I'm curious if you can help me understand the impact that this legislation will have on fireworks or private companies that sell fireworks. Does it make it easier? Will it make it harder? Just anything you can kind of share about the industry. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Armstrong, it will make it easier for the industry so that way we're comparing apples to apples and not apples to oranges.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Mr. Nakano? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nakano, the question that I have might not be able to be answered, but when it says that we're repealing the enforcement regulations, I mean, I'm turning to this page slide 4, this is regulations under AS 18.72.010 would supersede the provisions of an ordinance adopted by a city or borough that are less restrictive than the regulations. So this update is going to, in some cases, make a city or borough's laws ineffective. Or they will supersede them, or they will replace them. In essence, is that correct? And if so, is there an analysis on how many cities that this is going to impact?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, this will not impact municipalities or boroughs. Currently, right now. We are basically open for all use in anywhere in Alaska, and the boroughs and the cities make that determination to be more stringent.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification.
You're welcome, sir.
Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, Chair Shah. Through the chair, I'm wondering if I just heard that correctly in that this makes it less restrictive, but it is still up to local municipalities if they want to have more restrictive codes that is allowed. If you could clarify that, please.
Through the chair, Representative Story, nothing in this section will affect the authority of a city or organized borough under the law to prohibit or regulate more restrictively than the regulation adopted under this statute.
Thank you for confirming that.
You're welcome, ma'am.
Additional questions. Any questions directly related to the sponsor? None. Ms. Puritan, do you have anything else you'd like to provide?
For the record, Lisa Puritan, to the chair, would nothing to provide. I would like to just clarify that the question from Representative Story and Representative Carpenter, in the current statute 1872-060 regarding the municipal regulation of fireworks, it currently has that same language that's in there. So it's just going to be repealed out of statute and replaced in the regulations with the same language. So it's not having an impact either way on the municipalities or boroughs. And then the other thing is, if you'd like me to go through the sectional, that was the only thing we had left to.
Nope. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that state statute takes precedent over local as long as the local is less restrictive. Do regulations have that same effect? Do they don't have the same power as statute. So would a statute, I mean, I'm wanting to understand the difference between if a municipality want to have a less lenient, they're violating the regulation, I don't think supersedes the municipalities, but a statute does. So can you help me work me through the difference in regulation versus statute and how a regulation can override a municipal bill, regardless of whether it's stronger or weaker?
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, I would have to consult with the Department of Law on that one. I'm afraid that's out of my wheelhouse unless the State Fire Marshal is able to weigh in on that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Nakano, would you like to weigh in on that?
No, I think we should discuss with law. However, I can give maybe a quick opinion of how we was doing it. What we do, with our adopted international fire code, our international building code, we have statute that we would adopt regulations for those codes. So we adopted the building code, fire code, fuel gas code, and a mechanical code. If you were asking if it's less lenient, if a place would like to be more lenient than what is adopted?
No, I, Mr. Chairman, if I might, I think the question is the weight of a regulation over overruling municipal ordinances versus the weight of a statute overweighting. I don't think a regulation has the same effect that a statute does. And so if my concept of how it works, this would be basically saying they could ignore the regulation, excuse me.
Through the chair, Representative, the regulations would be statewide as a minimum, and local jurisdictions would be either more stringent or equal to. Just like with our international fire code, building code, fuel gas code, and mechanical code.
Follow up?
Thank you, but I think those were adopted into statute.
No, the international fire code, building code, mechanical code is adopted by regulation by the Department of Public Safety by our division.
Thank you.
Representative Allard?
Thank you. I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Representative Johnson had said. So if I'm not mistaken, I'm going to probably stumble over my words for a minute. And through the chair, you can't make a statute, you can't add to a statute. Wait, no, you can't take away, right? You can take a regulation. Hold on, let me go through my train of thought here. You can always add to, you can't take away. So if the statute is less than, the municipality can't make it stricter. They would have to put some sort of emergency order in play and for that to happen. So if you have a less stricter code or state law, we can't supersede that. So we can't take away from it. So we can't say, hey, we're going to enforce it at a higher level. Coming from the municipality part, do we have legal or someone on the phone? I'm trying to go back through my thought process of being on the Anchorage Assembly. We can't supersede state law. So I'm trying to think. I just don't know if the fire marshal is has a clear idea of what we're trying to ask. But I think Representative Carpenter wants to say something.
Did you want to talk? Representative Carpenter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Representative Allard for consideration here. I'm looking at page 2, line 20 through 20, line 22 of the bill of HB 146. And it says in the bill, however, nothing in this section affects the authority of a city or an organized borough under other law to prohibit or regulate more restrictively than regulations adopted under the statute that we're redoing. And that is specifically for the offerings for sale, exposure for sale, sale use, or explosion of fireworks.
Okay, thank
you. So I think that might be addressing what you're...
Yeah.
And Representative Johnson, does that clear up your answer? Because it sounded pretty specific.
Well, not really, because, Mr. Chairman, I just want to understand how a municipal code, I know they can't do anything less restrictive than a statute. But my question is, can they do something less restrictive than a regulation? And what does that carry? If you have a municipal code that is different than a regulation, I just don't know the difference necessarily between the regulation versus the statute. Now, a statute carries more weight. And so I just trying to work it out. I also like to, I think that we do vote on the builder's code. I seem to remember the International Fire Code and Builder's Code, us having voted on it. So, and maybe I'm wrong and my history's bad, but if we have someone from legal, I think they could clear it up and make this a very simple yes or no answer.
Ms. Puritan, we don't have anybody on legal right here. Can you follow up on that question for us and then get back with us?
Through the chair, absolutely. We'll check with legal and verify the precedence of the regulations to be able to take precedence over a municipal code.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I have an addition to that request. I think the bill here establishes the Department of, and maybe this is, says repealed and reenacted, so I'm not sure what the current statute says. The bill doesn't say amend, so this may already be there. This is the Department of Public Safety shall adopt regulations for the purpose of protecting life and property. And to the extent that a regulation would have the effect of law, we are saying here a person who recklessly fails to comply would be guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. So the question that I have, is that a violation, that Class B would be a violation of the statute or a violation of the regulation that is created by the commissioner? And maybe, since we have the commissioner here, he might be able to answer that, but I can wait for an answer from legal as well.
Puritan, are you good with that?
Through the chair, to Representative Carpenter, yes, I can add that as an additional follow-up with the Department of Law, so we have a definitive answer on that. Thank you.
Representative Story?
Thank you, Chair Shaw. Through the chair, on page 2 of the bill, a line 6 through 8, it says, during reasonable business hours, the Department of Public Safety may, for the sole purpose of inspecting fireworks for compliance with regulations adopted under this section, may enter any building where fireworks are stored or kept. So that could be an individual, personal-owned building, a commercial building, any building.
Through the chair to Representative Story, I will defer to the State Fire Marshal for clarification on that question.
Mr. Nakano? Mr. McConner, did you hear that question, or are you off mute? Are you still there?
Sorry, through the chair. Yes, through the chair, I'm sorry.
Did you hear the question?
Businesses, yes, I did. Through the chair, the businesses would be for the retail, wholesale, and displays.
To the chair, Follow-up, yes. I'm wondering if we would need to clarify that, because it says any building, and if it doesn't say commercial or display, someone could think it would be a personal, individually owned building.
Ms. Puritan, is your list growing?
Through the chair, yes, it is. Thank you.
You okay with that, Representative Story, for a follow-up?
Yes.
Any additional questions for the bill sponsor, Representative Allard?
I agree with Representative Story because it's not real clear in there, and I wonder if someone can just like walk into someone's garage and show up, because it can happen, right? And so I think that clarity does need to be put in there. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Are we good, Ms. Puritan, on all this? Okay.
Through the chair, yes, sir.
Yeah, good. And I understand there's a zero fiscal note.
Through the chair, that is correct. The department has a zero fiscal note.
Okay, that brings us to invited testimony. We don't have any additional invited testimony online. That brings us to public testimony. I'll go ahead and open for public testimony now. Is there anyone in the room who would like to provide testimony on House Bill 146? Seeing none. Do we have anyone online? I don't see anyone online to provide testimony on House Bill 146. See when no one else to testify, I'm closing public testimony on House Bill 146. With that, we're going to hold this bill over. Any additional questions from members of the committee to the bill sponsor? Or anybody at this point? None? Okay, very well. With that, we're going to hold this bill to a later date. Many members would like to have amendments considered for this bill. The amendment deadline is noon, April 19th. If members would like their amendments considered by the committee, please have them to my office by that time. Before we hold this bill over, does the bill sponsor have any final comments to make?
Through the chair, no, we don't at this time. Thank you.
Representative Carpenter?
Question regarding the response back from Department of Law in time for an amendment to get drafted by the 19th. Is that a doable time frame?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, we feel confident in that ability to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Carpenter. Okay, at this time, we're going to hold House Bill 146 for consideration in another hearing. Okay, our final order of business is Senate Bill 38, entitled An Act Establishing the Crime of Interference with Emergency Communications, sponsored by Senator Wilson. I'll take a brief at ease. From the bill, sponsor to hear invited and public testimony, and then hold the bill over. We've got Senator Wilson's staff, Jasmine Martin, in the room to present the bill. Ms. Martin, welcome to the House State Affairs Committee, and you're at the table. If you please introduce yourself and present your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, this is Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. Senator Wilson had to leave to chair not one but two committees back-to-back. So, unfortunately, it can't be three places at once. In front of you today, you have Senate Bill 38, an act establishing the crime of interference with emergency services. 911 is a service we often take for granted. 911 centers are an essential link in our emergency response system. They're what gets our communication about an emergency to the emergency first responders. Without them, the system really falls apart. Harassing calls are severely impacting our public safety and emergency response by delaying responses to real emergencies. SB 38 addresses these issues by clearly making harassing 911 dispatch centers a crime. So this bill makes it a crime to call 911 repeatedly when there is no new emergency or an emergency dispatcher has instructed a caller to stop calling, to call 911 repeatedly knowing that there is no emergency, and to threaten a 911 operator in the course of a 911 call. In the past, law enforcement has attempted to use other statutes to charge these behaviors, such as harassment, false reporting, and disorderly conduct. Often these efforts are dismissed by prosecuting attorneys because of the ambiguity of these statutes. And so it captures some behavior, it does not capture all of this behavior. What this bill does is it captures this behavior specifically. This bill has the support of many affected agencies. You'll see behind me the Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety, the Alaska Association of Police Chiefs, Public Safety's Employees Association, Anchorage Police Department, the Matsu Borough, Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, the Bristol Bay Borough Police Department. There's more letters of support in your packet. I won't read all of them off. But with that, I can dive into a brief sectional analysis if you'd like me to.
I think you've done a pretty good job with your presentation, pretty condensed, so we probably don't need a sectional analysis overview. Pretty good review of emergency communications.
Okay, thank you, Chair. If you would like, we have three invited testifiers. We have Mr. Jacob Butcher and Joel Butcher, who are not related to each other, and we also have, finally, the Commissioner of Public Safety in the room as well.
All right, thank you. Commissioner, would you like to come on board first? Yeah. Either or? Okay.
Couldn't answer your questions on fireworks. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Go ahead and introduce yourself and give us your presentation.
To the Chair, James Cockrell, Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. I'll make this brief. I've testified on this bill several times, both in the Senate House last year and in the Senate this year. First of all, to be clear, the Alaska Department of Public Safety, as most law enforcement agencies in the state that run and operate a professional dispatch center, supports this bill. This bill is overdue for many, many years. Law enforcement officers, dispatchers that are essentially our lifeline to our law enforcement officers on the road have been plagued by individuals that continue to call 911, the emergency line, to take up time to either habitually complain about law enforcement activities, law enforcement officers, or just to call and complain. They threaten dispatchers. They take up time because even though we know anymore with the technology who's making that phone call, we still have to answer, or our dispatchers do, and it takes them away for real emergencies, and there is really no option for us to charge somebody for it, and we can't even, I'll say, threaten to charge somebody if they continue to do this. This at least gives us a tool to warn a person, hey, you need to stop calling 911, making bogus calls, or threatening our dispatchers, or if not, we're going to come out and arrest you. We don't have that ability right now. Do we see a huge caseload on this? No, it doesn't happen a lot of times, but when it does happen, it's very disruptive to the dispatchers. Our dispatchers are under a lot of stress as it is, especially when they're on the consoles of the 911 calls. They're making immediate decisions on who needs to respond, either law enforcement, EMS, or fire. And sometimes they're responding all units, depending on the type of activity that is involved in the 911 call. So I can go into more detail, but I'll keep it simple. We need this bill. It doesn't cost us anything, and it gives us a tool to prevent people from making continuous 911 calls that back up our system.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have Joel Butcher online. Would you like to provide a testimony and introduce yourself, please?
To the Chair, for the record, Joel Butcher, Palmer, Alaska, President of the Alaska Joint Chapter of APCO and NENA. These two professional organizations, APCO is the Association of Public Safety Communications Officials, and NENA is the National Emergency Number Association. Chapter membership includes 160 emergency service dispatchers, support personnel, and radio technicians across the state of Alaska. When this type of activity occurs that is described in this proposed legislation, it degrades the service that the Communications Center provides to others, taking time away from real emergencies that may be occurring at the same time. We support this legislation as there is no current state statute that addresses or criminalizes this type of activity. We support this legislation as this legislation is not about criminalizing someone that calls 911 in error. This is giving dispatchers and 911 call takers the ability to cite a statute, warn a caller of their behavior, and provides law enforcement a statute to arrest as a last resort to stop the negative impact the activity is having on the communication center. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butcher. Jacob Butcher, if you'd like to introduce yourself and provide your testimony, please.
Yeah, thank you so much. My name is Jacob Butcher. I'm the communications manager for MATCOM Dispatch. I've been a telecommunicator for 17 years in South Central. During my time in this profession, I've answered countless emergency calls for help from members of our communities. have been instrumental in providing emergency life-saving support, such as walking a wife through bleeding control instruction on her husband, de-escalating a suicidal subject with a firearm in their hand, and providing a new mother with CPR instructions on her infant child. These are the types of incidents every emergency dispatcher handles on a day-in and day-out basis and can occur at any given time on any given day, which is honestly part of the fulfilling aspect of this work. It is important to understand that not every 911 call ringing into the center is a life and death emergency, yet every call must be answered and processed in an appropriate and efficient manner to determine if the actual emergency exists. Those calls which are not emergent can normally be handled in stride with grace and education to redirect non-emergency 911 calls to the appropriate resource. However, there are some instances where explanation and education just cannot surmount the disruption caused by intentionally false, disorderly, and harassing calls to the 911 center. I can attest with personal experience over the July 4th, 2021 holiday weekend in which our 911 center was more or less attacked by two separate forms of this interference with emergency communication. One was through computerized call spoofing in which false emergencies were reported with the intent to elicit a large response from both law enforcement and EMS. These spoofing calls placed a total of 45 false reports within a 24-hour period, each of which needed appropriate call processing, follow-up, and vetting to ensure the reported incident was false. These calls tied up resources from MATCOM, the Department of Public Safety, Anchorage Police, and Anchorage Fire Departments, among others. The second yet simultaneous issue that the center encountered was a member of the community who was upset with the way a previous case had been handled and chose to air their frustrations to the 911 dispatchers by dialing the emergency number over 80 times in one day, only to unleash a barrage of profane, insulting, and extremely vulgar expressions on the telecommunicators before hanging up. Concurrently with these disrupting calls, the communication center staff was left attempting to sift through the false and harassing incoming calls to provide actual emergency assistance in response to a myriad of real-life emergencies, which included a reported drowning with ensuing water rescue efforts, two plane crashes, one of which involved two parents and a young child, four separate reported wildfires, and one pole structure fire. I ask that each member of this committee place themselves in the position of calling 911 seeking help for your loved ones and being placed on hold for a false or harassing 911 call such as that. Most true emergencies are those where seconds count, and that is just not a sacrifice we can afford. SB 38 would provide a mechanism in which law enforcement could react swiftly to resolve these disruptions to our central public safety infrastructure. Quick resolution to these disruptions can free up the 911 line, unencumber the emergency telecommunicators and responders, and expedite these resources to the members of our state with true time-sensitive emergencies. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butcher. That pretty much covers our invited testimony. Before we go into questions, I understand there's a zero fiscal note?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. That covers all of our invited testimony again. Is there any questions from the committee? Representative Story.
Thank you. Through the chair. Welcome, Commissioner. It's good to see you. I'm wondering how the emergency personnel assesses knowingly, person knowingly calls. And so that's a question. And then if it's a person, if they've assessed, has a mental health, behavioral health issue, what happens then? Is that person, I'm sure it depends upon the community, but how, what would happen to that person if they did have a behavioral health issue and you were going to check on that? So two questions. How do you assess knowingly first?
Through the chair, Representative Story, thank you for your question. First, I'll ask your first question first. Generally, what we would do and what we would instruct our dispatchers to do is to give them a warning, say this is inappropriate. If you don't basically knock it off, we're going to call law enforcement and you could be arrested for it. So essentially, and then if they continue to call, they know at that point in time they meet that standard that if they continue to call, we've told them not to call, that we beat the knowing standard. The mental health issues is something that we discussed in our last hearings last year. It's certainly a good question because there's that fear that we would go arrest somebody that's having a mental health crisis. Again, I would rest on the discretion of the law enforcement officer that would actually go out to the residence or their car or wherever they happen to be if they could locate them. And then we'd have to assess their mental health capabilities that time if their life, if they're in danger or they're, you know, hurting themselves or something else like that. We might have to look at doing a Title 47 hold on them. It just depends. The mental health certainly is an issue in the state, and law enforcement through the years is getting more and more training on how to deal with mental health crises. But that's really not what we're trying to address. We're trying to address somebody that's upset with, usually it's a law enforcement action that they didn't like, interaction with the police, and then they take it out on the dispatchers. And some of the stuff they say is very, very, very offensive and horrible, and they don't deserve that. I mean, they have a hard enough time just handling the radio traffic and the 911 calls and all the other calls that are coming in, especially with the event of cell phones, because everybody calls. I don't know how many false 911 calls they get, you know, but dialing a 911 or whatever they're doing. So they're very stressful. It's very difficult to maintain and retain dispatchers. My wife runs the center in Soldotna, and she can attest to that. And I know that I met with Jacob here a couple of days ago, and they have the same issues as trying to keep dispatchers, and it doesn't help when people are yelling at them on the phone or calling them nasty names or threatening to kill them. So this is what we're trying to address. We're trying to save our dispatchers. It's over. It's needed, and it should have been done many, many years ago. Many states have the same type of law. It's a Class B misdemeanor, so it's not a felony. Chances are they probably wouldn't be arrested at the time. We'd probably end up giving some kind of a citation, but it does at least give us the ability to warn them and then take action if they continue to do it. It's a good thing. It doesn't cost the state anything. It protects you, because if you're involved in an accident and we can't get resources out to you because we got an individual tying up our centers, and some centers don't have multiple consoles that they're working. Some of the smaller departments have one or two dispatchers on, where MATCOM might have three or four, Soldotna may have three or four. But when you have multiple emergencies going, either police emergencies or mental health or fires, all these things take up dispatcher's time. So we can't afford to have somebody continue to call like 80 times. It's not unusual to see. It doesn't happen all the time, but we need to address it, and this is one way to do it.
Follow-up comment, please. So does Soldotna have like a crisis now or some center that if someone was, I mean, we don't want someone arrested if they're having a behavioral health situation, and unfortunately I've heard from a few families whose child, they were protesting they shouldn't be arrested and have a behavioral health issue, and you know, we wouldn't want to handcuff somebody and create more trauma. So I'm wondering, what do you have in Soldotna?
Through the chair, Soldotna doesn't have a crisis now model yet. I know that they're setting one up in Matsu Valley. Fairbanks has one through the city and borough of Fairbanks, which has been pretty, my understanding has been very, it's a good thing there in Fairbanks, and certainly we support that. And again, we continue to provide extra more training for our troopers, because it's something that we seem to be dealing with the state more and more all the time.
So, thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The title basically says interference with emergency communications, but the bill addresses pretty much 911. Are there other types of interference of emergency communication? Officer, you know, car to car, firefighters, any of that stuff. Are there any other instances where interfering that we could maybe fix more than this? I know this is very simple. I support it, but if we got a bite at the apple, you know, is it out there? Even interfering with a radio station, you know, broadcasting an emergency broadcast under this title, we could put in there. So
I'll let her address that first.
Good.
She's ready.
For the record, this is Jasmine Martin. Through the chair to Representative Johnson. So if you look at the definition of emergency communication, it includes communications made between an emergency communication center and police, fire, or medical, but also the communications between police with each other, fire with each other, police and fire.
Follow up. Thank you. And that's fine, but that's agent within an agency. I'm thinking about maybe the example would be a radio station broadcasting emergency broadcast, and if somebody interfered with that, that would not qualify under this. That may be the least of their problems of interfering if they do that. But I mean, I'm just looking out there. Are there any other emergency communications that we know of outside of police, fire, corrections, probably that would fall under that category? I think even if someone wants to stop and talk to a policeman and someone prevents them from doing that, I mean, is interference with emergency communication. So, you know, is I'm just looking at a better definition maybe of emergency communication or you know, just seeking out some information here.
Through the chair, I think we could revisit what you're trying to articulate. I think what we're looking at is folks that are actually interfering with our communication service. So that's if they, because we do have towers out around that are repeaters that assist us. And if they went in there and destroyed, of course there would be other crimes then, it's a little bit different. But if they somehow interfered with those by jamming them or something like that, then we would have the tools to charge them with that, even though I think we would charge them with a higher level crime if they were actually either destroying or jamming our signals. And most radio communications between law enforcement and EMS and that is encrypted. Like the old days, we could have the scanners on and you could listen to what the police are doing, but most police departments, troopers in general, all their radios are encrypted. So a person would have a difficult time getting onto our frequency. If he did, he'd have to have some kind of knowledge of what frequency that we're operating on. And then again, he would be interfering with law enforcement. I could see on a traffic crash where we had multiple units there, EMS fire and stuff, where somebody bystanders decided to try to interfere with the operations of that by either starting to yell or whatever, or I could see that maybe being part of it where they're stopping law enforcement from actually calling on the radio or talking to other law enforcement or EMS. But I think then again, we probably most likely would have a different crime. So.
Thank you, Chair. That's fine.
Representative Allard.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing because we have our emergency management system. So during offices, so municipalities set one up. I mean, they have one, but during COVID earthquakes, they do set stuff up. And I was wondering about closing the loop to perhaps include that. But if there's something we already have in statute, I just didn't know if that would also be put in there. What's your thought on that through the chair? Thank you, Chair. I mean, I know you said it, but I just want to make sure that we tackle all of them.
For the record, this is Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. Through the chair to Representative Allard. So with the chair's permission, I'd like to talk about a bill we worked on last year, if that's all right. We had a very, very similar piece of legislation that got very close to passing. I believe Representative Story probably remembers it. Almost identical to this, but it did have a piece actually about physical disruption of infrastructure in there and emergency communications. And we actually pulled that out. And the reason we pulled that out is in talking with Department of Law, that is already a crime. That is already clearly a crime. And it's more than a Class B misdemeanor. So we pulled that out to avoid confusion.
All right. Thank you for the clarification.
Representative Story?
Yes, thank you. And I know you said that this didn't happen that often through the chair. When it did happen, though, it was highly disruptive. And do you think this bill will help with, like, employee retention of dispatchers?
Through the chair, that's one of the goals of this, is to cut down on unnecessary cut down on people that potentially would call our centers and harass our dispatchers. Again, it doesn't happen a lot, but I think once we set a standard and the public knows that you cannot do this, I don't see it occurring all the time, but it is one of the reasons that we're pushing this bill, is to protect our dispatchers. Even though they're in a confined space, we still have to protect them from outside sources, and this is one way to protect them.
Thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. And through the chair, I guess I'm supportive of the concept. It sounds like it's needed. And I guess the question that I have is, in today's day and age with cell phones being used, a name comes up on the screen and you're aware of who the registered user of the phone is. But when the law enforcement shows up to serve notice that they're now being charged with a misdemeanor, do we really know who that owner of that phone is, the one making the call at that point? So how would that work out? How would a law enforcement officer know that 15, 20 minutes, an hour later, 8 hours later, when they show up at the residence, of the name of the person who called in, that the person that owned the phone was actually making the phone call?
For the record, this is Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. I just wanted to remind us, we also have two testifiers online who are dispatchers. Oftentimes, in listening to some of these phone calls, the people do the work for you. They tell you who they are. And again, it wouldn't be a 8 hour later sort of situation. Sending a law enforcement officer out to someone's house would be to actively stop the situation that's going on and the calls that are tying up the lines. It would be a very emergency situation.
Through the chair, I'll answer this really briefly. Essentially, any action police does, there's an investigation. And there might be a time where we can't actually prove who actually made that phone call, and then we have to take it where it is, right? But again, it's up to us to investigate it, decide if there's enough probable cause to make an arrest, and then we'll go from there, or submit a report, a case to the DA's office for review. I mean, but again, this gives us a tool. I think if we overthink this, then we're kind of going past the point of what we're trying to accomplish.
You good?
I'm good.
Okay, you're good. Okay, it looks like we have no other questions from the committee. That brings us to public testimony. I'm going to open public testimony now. Anyone in the room would like to provide testimony on Senate Bill 38? Seeing none. We have no one else online. Seeing no one else, I'm closing public testimony on Senate Bill 38. With that, before we hold the bill over, any additional questions for staff or sponsors of the bill? Very well. With that, we're going to hold this bill to a later date. Any members would like to make amendments considered for this bill? The amendment deadline is noon on Wednesday, April 19. If members would like their amendments considered by the committee, please have it to my office by that time. Before we hold this bill over, does this bill sponsor have any additional comments to make?
To the chair, this is Jasmine Martin. Staff to Senator Wilson, no additional comments. Thank you so much for hearing the legislation today.
At this time, we're going to hold Senate Bill 38 for consideration and another hearing. This concludes our business for the hearing, and with that, we adjourn at 4:10 p.m.